Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puckin' Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
I'm Paul.
We are back together, gentlemen. It's been a couple episodes away from each other. Not that we needed it or anything, but...
trying to get things worked out. Yeah. There's no. I don't think there's going to be any delays on this.
Not on it. Well, hopefully not, anyway. We are in person now, but right. Yep. Yeah, it's been a while. Unfortunately, the last time we talked, I was a little hopeful about how things were going to look for the Vancouver Whitecaps, and unfortunately, they did lose the game versus Inter Miami on Saturday. It was a bummer. It was a bummer.
Heartbreaker by the sounds of it.
You know, I think the thing that made it so heartbreaking was the fact that they were the better team. You know, one of our least favorite things about soccer is the way that players throw themselves on the field when they're trying to get a call from the ref.
Yeah.
And that Inter Miami team, it's like what they're famous for. They fake injury after fake injury after fake injury. There's a specific moment where Thomas Muller's standing over top of a guy and he's literally writhing in pain. This is just after they show the replay of it, and the guy literally gets like his finger touched on the guy's shoulder and he's just like, "Oh my God, I'm dying."
Yeah,
and
I understand that.
And even Muller was like, "What are you doing?" Like, it takes the integrity out of the game, you know? Like, it's so frustrating to watch when you consider what Vancouver has done this season to kind of finish it off that way. But I think one positive that we Vancouver fans anyways can say is that you know, it looks like they're going to be a competitive team again next year. Thomas Muller has already come out and said that he's going to re-sign with the team this year, and yes. he'll be there with them the entire season this time. So it's going to be interesting to see like where they go.
Yeah.
They just announced actually today as we record this that it looks like they're in talks with the city of Vancouver to basically get into a new stadium.
Hastings Park.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hastings Park, the old race course, 100 years old. That race course, it's been around for 100 years.
Yeah.
They closed down, unfortunately, sadly, you know, for the people who were there and a part of it for so long. You know, they're closing it down, but it sounds like the city of Vancouver wants to build a stadium there, a world-class stadium, and it's not going to be exclusive to soccer. Like, there's a potential the BC Lions could move there as well.
Right.
The big reason why they want out of BC Place in the first place is because they don't make revenue from that place. They don't make money from the concessions. They don't, you know, they barely make anything from the ticket sales. Like, they have to pay BC Place every time they hold a game there. And so it makes it really, really challenging. Now, the city of Vancouver will own the land that the new stadium will be built on, and they'll own the stadium as well. But it sounds like the Whitecaps and whoever else might operate out of that building will also pay a lease to basically run it, which is great because you pay a monthly lease and you can still take revenue from ticket sales. You can still take revenue from concession sales, things like that. So it will benefit the team big time. And they'll be able to bring in big players like Thomas Muller and actually be able to afford
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So
I was kind of curious about that, if you knew anything about their attendance numbers in BC Place, because the capacity at BC Place is over 50,000.
53,000, if I remember yeah. correctly. It might even be higher than that. But yeah, and you know what's funny is when they did the renovation in 2011,
right.
I think prior to that, it used to be upwards of 60,000.
So it's looking like their average attendance this year was just under 22,000 per game.
Average,
so that's
yeah.
half capacity.
Yeah. yeah.
Now, do you guys anticipate, or do you think that they might make the stadium smaller amount of seating?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it kind of being in comparison with other MLS arena or
right.
stadiums. Pardon me. That you know, maybe they're looking at something like 30,000 to 40,000.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if they build another stadium that holds 50,000 people, because you want to be able to attract those big
yeah.
events like the
yeah.
Grey Cup or you know, in this case, we've got the World Cup coming to Vancouver next year. So
Port City, you could have concerts,
exactly.
like major
yeah.
concerts. Not
well,
that you can't do that in Rogers Arena.
It
stuff.
Sounds to me like the idea is that they want the P&E kind of area, which is, you know, where Hastings Racecourse is, it's going to be an entire entertainment district where they're going to have an amphitheater for concerts. They're going to have, of course, the PWHL team is going to be playing out of Pacific Coliseum. They'll have this stadium for soccer and for football and for other things, you know, that they could potentially have out
yeah,
of there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do, and it's going to be really interesting to see what Vancouver Whitecaps do to improve especially over this next year with the way they saw the attendance numbers rise after signing a player like Thomas Muller. So,
I mean, their management was talking in the offseason. They're basically like, you know, yeah, we had a fairly successful year. We didn't win the MLS Cup, but to paraphrase, like, we're an up-and-coming team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not, this wasn't a one-off. Like,
yeah,
we've been gradually getting better every single year.
That's right.
So, I mean, get ready for us, Vancouver, basically, yeah. Is kind yeah. of what he was,
it's,
his point, right? Yeah.
It's very exciting, and it's a nice positive to cap off a season where it ended in such a negative way. But it's just a matter of, like, you know, the benefit for Whitecaps fans is that, you know, there was all this talk of they may have to move the team to a new city if we can't get something done.
Right.
Because BC Place financially doesn't work for the team, right? So the other question that I asked when I saw the news story was, what are they going to do with BC Place if they don't have, you know, any major, you know, kind of, what's the word? Somebody who operates out of that stadium. Like, if BC Lions they got nothing. So, I mean, they have lots of stuff that they still do out of that venue. Like, I know they do, like, you know, monster truck shows, and they do concerts. Obviously, Taylor Swift had her big final tour, Eras tour thing there. So, yeah, I mean, they still do stuff, but you want somebody who's going to be in there permanently that'll be able to, you know, bring in that revenue. Yeah, so,
consistently.
Yeah.
Man, that's going to be the pressing question, I think.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like it's if for the new stadium. Like,
yeah,
they're doing
it. It's happening.
It's
happening. It's just a matter of so what they agreed on today was a memorandum of understanding, which basically states this is what's going to happen when the stadium is built. The city basically just has to figure out how the stadium gets built at this point. So,
I mean, that's still 4 or 5 years before it would be complete, even if it started now.
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's time to figure it all out.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure there's probably, I mean, the amount of money living and walking the streets of Vancouver.
It's incredible.
Is incredible. I mean, and you get a lot of guys, like, I know he's involved with another soccer club or a football club, but Ryan Reynolds is an example.
Yeah, yeah.
From the city, from the area that loves that sort of thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he invested somehow.
Steve Nash is one of the current owners of the Whitecaps.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's so many different faces, you know, famous faces, people who've basically been in the business who could easily buy into it. Ryan Reynolds being one of them, obviously, would be incredible. But yeah, it's just a matter of, like you say, it's just a matter of finding, you know, finalizing the deal to get them a permanent home that's going to be a place that is theirs, rather than, say, you know, renting a place like BC Place where you just don't know where it's going to be down the road.
Probably the best time that it's happening too, considering they just went to the final, right?
So
it's one of those things you're going to have a lot of fanfare that will help kind of generate revenue by, you know, coming into a place like that, right?
So, and it's going to create anticipation too.
Yeah,
people know a stadium's coming. They're walking by, they're driving by, they see it as it's being erected.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, an up-and-coming team, they're going to continue to be good.
Even the mayor, when he was doing the press conference today, had said that they plan on eventually having a SkyTrain that goes to the PNE, which is, like, pretty exciting. Yeah. I mean, they've got Playland right there as well, right?
Yeah.
So there's going to be so much stuff for the whole entire family to do in Vancouver in that specific area. So when they say entertainment district, it's not just entertainment.
Think about, like, tourist packages, right?
You exactly. Know,
like, they could easily expand that. And tourist companies obviously are going to make money off that, because they're like, hey, we could set you up with the Playland and get you out into the games. And
isn't the casino downtown as well?
Yeah.
I just thought of something.
On the east side?
There's been a lot of talk over the years about the potential of Vancouver having a baseball team. What if this new stadium is a stepping stone towards that? Or they turn BC Place into
a baseball stadium.
Yeah. Yeah. The potential's there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a stadium like BC Place. Originally, when they built BC Place, ironically enough, it was intended to be built for baseball.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool when you think about it. There's a lot of different seeds being planted, obviously, when it comes down to it. But it's just a matter of, you know, what's going to happen at this point, and when is it going to happen is the other part of it. So, kind of on the other end of the spectrum when it comes to excitability, there's also the lack of excitement, which is what's happening with the Vancouver Canucks right now. I wanted to get this in early because I felt like, you know, we don't want to bring people down too much, especially people who are Canucks fans. It is bad for hockey, though, too, I think, when it comes to a Canadian team suffering and having these type of woes. I don't think it's good for Canadian hockey in general. We want all of Canada's teams to be successful. We want everybody to be, you know, selling out arenas and things like that. When it comes to a team like Vancouver struggling as they are, currently sitting last place in the entire league, if you go to tankathon.com, Vancouver has the best odds to win first overall, which is, I mean, it's December, you know, whatever, but it's a scary thought. And it's also an exciting thought if you're a Canuck fan, too. You have the potential of landing Gavin McKenna. But
how realistic is that statement that you just made? How are you feeling about
right now, I'm feeling honestly, like it's an entire possibility.
No, that's not my question specifically is, how are you feeling about the way they are right now? Are you just like just mad and, you know, the screw hockey and the hell with this? Or are you like, well, I mean, I didn't expect it. It is what it is. Like, where, what side of the fence are on? Or are you just grabbing onto the electric fence and going nuts? What's happening in your life? You
know? My feeling is reflective of those who go to the games. If you go to a game and you watch the Canucks lose, they lost 4-0 the other day to Detroit. Fans didn't boo. I mean, some fans booed, but the majority of fans didn't boo. They just walked out. And it was like, that's the feeling of Canucks fans right now. We are so sick and tired of the what ifs in this team. And the idea that we're still trying to become a contender where nothing happens. Like, I told you at the beginning of the year before training camp that on paper this team should be as good as they were in 2024. But here we are, sitting last place in the league, and it's December, and they have done nothing to improve the team. They have done nothing to you know, even make a statement to say, this is what we're trying, we're waiting for this, anything. And then it's just talk after talk after talk of, we need to make changes, but they're not making those changes.
The only thing they've come out and said is that, you know, you can call about our veteran players.
Exactly.
And then there's a lot of noise, obviously, about
and that's the other thing I want to talk about.
One American on that team.
Yeah, that's something I want to talk about. But before I get into that, like, it's just, it's so much noise, but it's like it feels like smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah.
And to Canuck fans, we just want and we want, like, what I would love is to have Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford sit down in front of the media and say, here is our plan. And if it means, you know, we are going to tank this year, great. You know, nobody's ever going to say that, right? But give us an idea of what you're planning, because we cannot gamble our money away hoping for a product that could potentially be good or could win a game, and then finding out they lose 4-0 because the effort wasn't there, the coaching wasn't there, something, right? As fans, it's the most insane thing in the world. Because what's the definition of insanity?
Doing the same thing over again, expecting
expecting a different
result. Yeah,
and that is literally what the Canucks have been for the past 10 years.
Well, it seems like there's almost a lack of direction. Like, it's, you know, go to acquire JT Miller. He's great for a couple of years. Resign him. He's not a good fit. No, let's move on from him. We're not certain whether we want to sell players. We'll tell people that we're selling players, but maybe we're putting our prices too high. Like, Keith for sure would. I don't know any team that wants to pay the price for him.
I don't know necessarily, too, if that's – not to interrupt you, but I don't know necessarily that the Keith for Sherwood thing is on them as it is the media.
Of course, but, you know, it's – The insiders get their leaks from people 100%. That are usually connected with the team, right? So you have to know that that's probably part of the conversation that's there.
And
right?
I know that there are multiple teams that are interested in Kiefer Sherwood, and it's probably going to come down to somebody just making the right offer at the right time.
Yeah,
well, they're definitely waiting for the trade deadline if they can. Yeah, that's when the prices are inflated.
But that's what I mean, at the right time, because, like, they are. I mean, historically, Jim Rutherford is the type of person to make a trade before the deadline. Because he tries to impact the market and get a better deal than, say, what most people would get. However, that's when he's buying, not when he's selling, right?
Yeah.
So
I wanted to ask you a question about your point you made about them possibly clarifying something in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they came out and said, hypothetically, hey, you know what? We've battled some injuries this year. We've got a new coaching staff. We've got a fairly young team. We're going to try to work a little retool here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could possibly trade away some of our veteran players, which, you know, could lead to us being lower in the standings, you know, that sort of thing. But this is our plan. Or hypothetically, sorry, not hypothetically, but how would you think, not what you necessarily would do, but fans, because you probably know the fan base better than Paul and I do, or at least have an understanding. Do you think fans would go, okay, thank you for the information, I get it, sucks, but we're going to wait to sell, I'm still rooting for the team, I still love the Canucks, that sort of thing? Or are people going to go, you know what, well, I'm not going to go check out a game now.
Yeah.
Because I'm not paying $800 for a ticket in the lower bowl to have them stink for the rest of the season. So now that thing that you're asking for, that clarification, could that be a double negative for the team?
100%. And yes, I don't think could. I think it would be.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time, it's a catch-22, because the way I see it, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. People are going to stop going to games because they're not winning.
Yeah.
People are going to stop going to games because they don't like the product.
Yeah.
Right? And so the fact that they're not doing anything to improve the team even right now, and they're sitting at the bottom of the league, injuries or not, they're not doing something. They're not doing something to improve the team. To me, that tells me that they're trying to tank, is what it tells me. I don't necessarily know that that's the case. But I think maybe part of me believes they're trying to tank because of the Quinn Hughes situation.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of I wanted to get into, because with Quinn Hughes right now, of course, all over the news, if you don't know what I'm talking about right now, then you have been living under a rock. Mm-hmm. Quinn Hughes, the talk of the NHL world right now is the fact that they're looking at trading Quinn Hughes. Looking at doesn't mean necessarily that it's going to happen. And I think that's the part that people seem to forget. I think the idea is, because the talk is out there, that it's definitely happening. But I think what really the conversation is being had right now is, what will it take for Vancouver to trade Quinn Hughes? And I think right now that's the discussion that's actually happening, is all, you know, all these different potential trade ideas to different teams and stuff like that. Like, you showed me one that, you know, somebody put out for the Leafs the other day, which I was just like, okay, like,
that's definitely from a fan though.
100%, right? Like, and everyone's gonna put stuff out there like that. I mean, we saw it with McDavid before he signed, right? Like, there was all that talk about what would it take, you know, to get McDavid out of Edmonton. It's the same
nine
idea.
First round picks,
literally, and probably more than that, right? Like, when you talk about the most important player on your team, That's where it comes from. Like, you know, it's going to take a lot to get Quinn Hughes out of Vancouver, because he means everything to Vancouver. You know, imagine the idea or the conversation of getting Matthews out of Toronto, right?
Yeah.
It'd be easier now than it has been in the previous, say, three or four, but...
But I mean, he's equivalent because they're both captains. They're also the most important player on your team.
Yeah.
Right? They are the makeup of your team. Without them, they're not the same team anymore.
As long as they're not making, like, Vince Carter type trades, you know, where Vince Carter got traded for pennies on the dollar kind of thing.
Yeah.
You'd hate to see that for, like, a Matthews or a Hughes. Quinn Hughes or anything like that. I personally don't feel that fan bases are going to get as alienated as we tend to think in regards to a rebuild, or, you know, say a team like Buffalo, right, who hasn't made the playoffs in 14 years. Or,
and how many first-round picks do they have?
Exactly.
First overall picks.
Or even looking at a team like the Leafs for years, where they toiled in the bottom of the standings, yet they sold out every night. I don't believe that fan bases are so alienated that they won't love their team still. However, you know, like I said, culture makes a difference. We've talked about that in the past. We look at players, again, like star players like Quinn Hughes, Austin Matthews, and so on. Do they draw? Absolutely. But, you know, players don't play forever either. So it's one of those things where I don't... The real diehard fans, and certainly where you live in population, makes a difference too.
Yeah.
I don't think at least... Some of the major Canadian teams and major American teams are ever going to have to worry about that.
No, and I think, too, the big argument when it came to, you know, when it comes to Vancouver losing ticket sales, so to speak, it actually stems from the idea that they won't be in the playoffs anymore, right? And when a team's not in the playoffs, they lose a ton of revenue.
Yeah,
totally.
You know, because the other part of that is, everything that they make at playoff games, the players don't get to take, right? There's no cut for the players. They've already made their cut. So all of that goes back to the owner, right? They want to be in the playoffs,
yeah.
Which is why they refuse to acknowledge the word rebuild in Vancouver. It's the number one reason. The ownership, the ownership does not like the R word, does not like it. We as fans, ultimately, we want to rebuild the culture of the team. Especially with the way things have been going. It's just negative after negative after negative after negative every year. We want to rebuild the culture of the team so that we can start fresh. And, you know, maybe that's accelerated if you end up getting a player like Gavin McKenna. I don't know. But, you know, there has to be a direction. And I think that's the issue for the fans.
Well, that's kind of what I was mentioning with, like, Alvin earlier. Like, it almost seems like there isn't a concrete direction to go, and that's hard for people to hear, because you want to know what's going to happen with the team too. So I get it's
the secretive part, and I mean that's what hockey's all about. I mean professional sports in general is all about, like, being secretive, not telling the fans everything,
like Toronto Maple Leaf injuries,
you know? Well, yeah. Injuries are the big one, but also, you know, direction. Like, you know, I'm sure when the Leafs weren't making the playoffs for so many years, you're just like, when is it going to happen? What are you guys going to do to fix this? And there was the Shanna plan, which you didn't actually know the entirety of that plan, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Shanna plan was only in the Austin Matthews.
That's era, right.
Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So before that, like for a decade.
Yeah.
The problem with it was they actually were trying to fix their team and they just couldn't do it.
Exactly.
They couldn't find the right mix.
Yep. And that was what we were dealing with Jim Benning, right? Like the same idea. You know, Jim Benning goes after a player like OEL, and we're just like, what are you doing? You know, we need to take a step back here. I mean, the whole reason why Trevor Linden stopped working with the team is because they wouldn't rebuild, right? And so this is the issue, you know, and you can only blame the owner because he's the only one who's still been around since that time, right? So
when if you're building up your team, a bad trade or a bad signing can play a huge difference too.
Like 100%.
I look at the Maple Leafs even just with the Brandon Carlo trade. Not that Carlo's a bad player, but some of the after effects you're seeing right now is it's looking like a bit of a lopsided trade.
Yeah.
But there's been plenty of those kind of trades out in the NHL or basketball, baseball, all of them. You know, it's not going to, again, destroy your team, but it really can slow the progress too. So
yeah, and I think there's a part that the teams themselves need to consider, and that is the fact that, you know, during this time, specifically the time of year that the year in fact that we're in, where everything costs more right now. Going to a hockey game is not the cheapest thing in the world. Ticket sales are bound to go down at some point because of the fact that people can't afford to go. Yeah. And if you're not going to put a product worth watching, I wouldn't be surprised if it affects it even more. So, yeah, it's scary. The thing I will say, you know, going back to the Quinn Hughes thing, I will say, like, I will be sad if he gets traded. Part of me believes I would say about 75% of me believes he's going to be traded. I don't necessarily think it's going to be in season, but it could be.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it makes me sad because, of course, I really like Quinn Hughes as a player. I think he's an excellent captain. He's a really good role model in the community. Imagine we get to keep Quinn Hughes and we get Gavin McKenna. To me, that would be incredible.
The biggest thing about that situation, and I've feared it pretty much every time Austin Matthews has gone to sign a new contract, is it just doesn't seem like he wants to play for a Canadian market.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've really thought that with Austin Matthews for a long, long time. And, you know, he just keeps re-signing, so I guess we're okay. but it's like you could see it in his body language even when he's being interviewed after the games, or even, you know, the little commercials and stuff that he does. It just looks like it's an inconvenience to speak to him.
Yeah.
And to me, that shows that you just don't want to be there necessarily. And that's my fear for Quinn Hughes, being an American, being that his brothers play in the NHL. They play on the opposite side of the country.
Yeah.
You know, opposite side of the continent, really. If he doesn't want to be there, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
At one way or the other, he's going to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Whether the team has control or not, even if the team has him under contract for another 5 years, and next year he goes, you know what, this isn't working for me.
Yeah, trade me.
And he requests a trade. He, you know, that's in his right too.
You don't want a player on your team that doesn't want to be there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And fans, that's a hard thing to get behind.
Yeah.
Because I mean, in Leafland, you're bad for a decade. You finally get this franchise player. Mm-hmm. And then, for example, 6 years later, he wants to leave.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe you get a little bit for him. But if it's made public that he wants to leave, you're not getting as much in the return.
Yeah.
And then you're almost back to square one, right?
100%.
And so from a fan's perspective, that frustration can go through the roof, right?
Yeah.
But again, if he doesn't want to be there, you kind of got to get behind it in some capacity.
100%. And I fully agree with that, too. And I think that's important to emphasize the fact that if the player doesn't want to be there, you should move off that player as quickly as possible, because you want people to be in the locker room that want to be there. And if there's somebody there that doesn't want to be there, then it can affect the culture of the team. In Quinn Hughes's case, I think ultimately I don't necessarily believe that he doesn't want to be there. I think what it is, and I think maybe the same could be said for Matthews, is that when they're not doing well, they don't want to face the media because they don't want to hear those negative questions.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to either, to be honest. And I could be playing for the Canucks. If I was if it was me right now, I'm 43, so that's never happening. But if I were capable of playing NHL hockey and I was playing for my hometown team, the team I cheered for growing up, I still wouldn't want to be there at that moment during a major loss when the team is playing crappy and not, you know, putting up the numbers. I totally get that. When you're the captain, you have no choice but to stand in front of those people. So.
And he's in a spot right now where he's going to get nothing but negativity, unfortunately, because
and,
of where they're, how they're
and
playing.
And repeating the same questions over and over again about, do you want to be with this team? What's going on?
Yeah. It's kind of wear on you too.
Yeah, it's tough. And I get what he's doing. You know, I can't blame Quinn Hughes at all for not, you know, straight up saying, yes, I want to be in Vancouver. I can't blame him for that. I wish he would. But I get that. I get why he's not doing that for his sake and for the team's sake, because obviously, like you say, that trade value goes down if he says, yeah, you know, I want to play somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's tough. It's tough. I think right now is a really, really challenging time for Canuck fans, and it's only going to get worse as the year goes on if things don't get better on the ice. So, you know, as we are all firmly aware, as, you know, hockey fans, we know what it's like to deal with this kind of pain and agony with our teams. But I just hope personally that it's not going to last forever.
Now, you know, talk about Austin Matthews. I'm actually in a bit of a disagreement with both of you in regards to, you know, his lack of emotion or care for the team. I believe life events can change kind of how you approach things, especially with his, I would say almost it's professionalism, not, but like the whole mooning situation that happened for him in early in his career where he got kind of got in trouble for that.
What, he mooned somebody?
Yeah, he like
outside of a bar.
Yeah, and he got arrested for it too.
Oh, really? He was just like
But I honestly, like, considering the coach at the time was
our future captain, everybody,
was Mike Babcock, and he was already known for like drilling players down.
Yeah.
I don't think like Matthews is necessarily emotionally stunted. I believe he's a lot more considerate about what he's saying and what he's doing and what emotion he's showing. Because I've seen videos too where they had like a video game hockey tournament in the Leafs dressing room, and he beat Zach Hyman in the tournament, and he was like, "Do you believe in miracles?" You know, he was super, super excited and happy. So like it's when it comes to the game.
Yeah,
he actually holds back a little bit because he needs to, because he's a leader for the team.
Well, I was going
to
say, and especially now because
especially now that he's captain, he really has to. You have to be paying attention to that.
Yeah, you're trying to lead by example, right? And I think what you're saying is not too far off from what I'm saying, maybe even what you're saying, in the emotional side of things. Yeah. Like, because he's a leader, yes, like that emotion has to be kind of, what's the word?
Stunted
like
a bit.
Pushed down a little bit, right? But at the same time, it's hard not to let out those negative things when you're dealing with loss, or when you're dealing with, you know, failure as a team in general. And as the captain, I mean, the weight is more so on your shoulders because you're leading the team. So in Quinn Hughes's case, I'm sure he's probably blaming himself a lot for the issues that the Canucks are dealing with right now, which is you know, really unfortunate. I don't want that for him, and I don't want that for the team. But at the same time, there's a part of me who believes maybe everything would be better for him and for the team if he were traded. Maybe if the negative connotations amongst it all, it would be better. But I mean, there's always going to be something, right? Yep. And I think that's the part that frustrates me a little bit,
yeah,
you know, as a Canuck fan. So. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, it's challenging times. It's difficult, but we learn to live with it as we always do as hockey fans. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at. Let's talk a little bit about the Leafs woes, maybe, or maybe not so much woes.
I mean, how much time do we have? We got to get our get our numbers in, but
yeah.
A little bit of positivity, I guess. They're moving in the right direction for the most part. Although, as we're recording, I'm not sure what's going on here. I might throw some stuff around.
As we're recording, we're currently watching the Leafs play the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah.
What period are we in right now?
This is overtime.
Oh, it's overtime.
Yeah, that's why it's frustrating. They were up 2-0 in the game. But
okay,
we're honestly, looking at the standings the way they are right now, they've clawed back a little bit. I think they're like 5-1-1 in their last seven. Their save percentage has gone from like mid-880s to like 954. Over the last,
we're dealing with a possible,
possible offside.
Offside,
I guess.
That's a close one.
It's gonna be close.
Yeah. I think that's offside, though. Personally,
I guess we'll see.
It looks like he skates over the line just before.
But just the entire.
Oh no, they're counting it a good goal.
Yeah, that's it.
That's too bad.
Yeah, good goal. Over. Okay.
The
sorry, buddy.
Frustrating when that type of game happens, and you know, a little bit of positivity creeps in, and then you struggle to hang on to it when you put up an effort like that against, I mean, I'm sorry, a team in San Jose that's not that great, even though the Leafs aren't that great either.
I mean, arguably, I will, to contrast what you're saying, I will argue that Sharks have actually been playing really well this year compared to past years anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, they are still lower
in
points than the Leafs are now, and the Leafs have been horrendous, and the Leafs have two games in hand on San Jose.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So, in the Pacific...
You could definitely argue this is a stinker for sure.
Yeah, in the Pacific Division, that's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
No offense.
Sadly.
They're not great.
No
so,
offense.
So losses.
My team
is
last place in the league, bro.
Yeah. So, anyway, about the Leafs though, like right now they're still sixth in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
But they are 2 points out of a
four
points out of a playoff spot. Oh. And they are 3 points out of a wild card spot.
Okay.
So, I mean, they got one back tonight, but, I mean, other teams are also playing. So,
yeah.
My point being is that they've kind of crawled back a little bit, but they've also gotten healthier for the most part, even though their goaltending, both of their top two goaltenders are out right now, and their top defenseman.
Hildeby's proving his worth, though.
I haven't been paying attention in this specific game. I know now it's over, but did you guys see OEL come back? Because there was that injury.
I haven't seen, no.
Yeah.
I haven't seen.
So a defenseman going down is definitely not going to help you in the long run.
Considering they're missing three of their... If he's out, that's three of their top four now.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, with Carlo and Tanev injured. Both right-handed defensemen, too.
Yeah.
Carlo.
So what do you think, ultimately, what are the biggest problems with the Leafs right now this year?
Well, the injuries are the big one. The goaltending has been better. Like as I said, the save percentage change is drastic. If you're not letting the puck into your net, you have a chance to win every night.
True.
I will say their offense has dried up a little bit. I didn't watch the game in depth tonight as we were prepping, but what I had heard as of yesterday morning, like the lines were just scrambled.
Hmm.
Like right scrambled. Like Nylander was starting on the third line tonight.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, you know, he's really looking for something because their offense has dried up. Now, I do know they scored a power play goal tonight, but, I mean, that has been dreadful. So, as much as the defensive play has gotten better, that's good, and that's helping them move up the standings a little bit at a time, but it's going to be tough to go on a roll if you're losing your offense. Yeah, you might be able to eliminate, you know, letting three or four goals in every game, but if you're only scoring one or two, it's not going to make a difference. Yeah.
Now, you can argue specifically in this game, defense is what actually hurt them. Right, I mean they had a 2-0 lead at one point.
The whole season, the defense has been hurting them.
Yeah,
really. Like I can't look at a game and be like, oh, the defense is bad again, but they were great the other games. No, the defense the entire season's been bad.
It's definitely a weird year.
You know, the injuries again play its part, but even to start the year when everyone was there, save besides Scott Laughton, for whatever reason, the team just seemed lost. It just like defensively in the defensive zone, nobody knew their assignments, knew their positions. So yeah, they probably lost from the defense tonight. But as a fan of the team, I'm not surprised either the way that the season's been going.
Yeah, they're turning the puck over too much. That's the big one. They can't move the puck from their own zone. And yeah. when you can't start a breakout and you're constantly turning the puck over, and then they get a minute and a half in your offensive zone and you're tired. That's what happened on the San Jose's tying goal tonight, is they were in their zone for almost 2 minutes. Their shift was almost two minutes long.
Yeah.
They were in their defensive zone. San Jose was on the offense for probably at least a minute and a half there without pressure being relieved at all. Can't get a line change. You're tired. And that seems to be happening a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah, the Leafs are going to make a big change for, let's say, getting a better puck moving defenseman, maybe two. I don't think giving up guys like Carlo when their value is down, giving up Michelli like when their value is down, they might have to look into two prospects. They really should be trying to get that big fish to play in the lineup that can move the puck. Like, Riley's a decent puck mover. He used to be a lot faster when he was younger. But
so did I.
Yeah, we all used to be. But at this point, like, fans aren't going to be upset if we're losing more picks at this point. We actually have an expectation of this team getting over the hump.
Yeah.
So
you were expected to compete this year.
We have a generational talent. It's time to not really care too much about the future. Make something happen while he's still here, because he said he might leave in a few years if he feels it's not going to happen.
Now, does that include trading? Like, is anybody untouchable for you?
Matthews?
Yeah. probably Matthews and probably
Nylander.
No, I'm okay with Nylander.
I know where you are. Yeah. Now, yeah.
Don't worry, he's a fantastic player. Nyes and Matthews for me.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I could see Nyes
and
for
Wall
sure.
Even.
Well, Nyes is still young too, right? Like, he's
22, I think.
Yeah, like
maybe 23.
Yeah. He's got a good career ahead of him still.
He could potentially make the USA roster
yeah.
for the Olympics. I don't think that they should trade Danford or Cowan.
I disagree.
And the reason that I think that is because I actually think they're already past their window. I truly believe that their window for being like a perennial second, third round team, like they had potential to be, like Florida Panthers has done the last couple of seasons, and how Boston has done for years and years. I think that window's closed, to be honest with you. And I think that a prospect like Cowan is going to be your future, and Danford coming in with the potential, again, that could change, but the player that he's proving to be right now, we're talking about your number one defenseman probably within the next 3 or 4 seasons.
And then when I'm talking about like trading prospects like them, right, I'm talking about like game changers. Like, you could look at Dallas was a good team last year. Mika Rantanen put them that next level up where they were almost in the final kind of thing. So I believe if you can get that quality player that is really going to change your game around, then you do give up guys. But it can't be a guy like Brandon Carlo where you could give a guy like Fraser Minton and a first for Carlo, who's a good tall defenseman defensively, but that's it. But it doesn't bring all other aspects of the game. If you're going to give up prospects like that, you have to get players that can do all aspects of the game.
Yeah, and I think also, too, longevity is a key factor there, because I compare what you're saying to what Vancouver went through in 2011. At the point where they were last in the Stanley Cup final, they had no prospects, literally no one, who was going to be like a top player for them, except Cody Hodgson, who they ended up trading away the following year.
Ended up being a bit of a bust anyway.
He did. Well, he got hurt. He got really badly hurt.
Right. Right.
But you know, they ended up getting Zach Cassian for Cody Hodgson at the time. Cassian, of course, had his career. He obviously had a better career than what Hodgson did, but in the end, Vancouver was never the same team, and it's been this long since they've been that good. So you really have to be careful in terms of what you're giving up, unless you can guarantee you're going to be competitive for a long time. So if you're going to trade for good players, my suggestion is make sure either they have a decent contract, give them a few years, or they're willing to re-sign with you. Because if they're not, you're giving yourself 1 year, and then you're done. Right. And then you have nobody. So it's like it is a tricky thing to do. But like you say, I think it can be done properly, where you're not screwing your team over forever. I mean, you don't have a lot of picks, obviously, because you've given up a lot of picks.
Not first rounds, yeah.
Which kind 20, of goes 20, 50 maybe? Which kind of goes Brandon's way in the sense of like you are giving up futures to or your way, pardon me, you are giving up futures to build your team up. But like you say, it's going to have to take prospects at this point to
make it. Yeah, like you're not looking at really draft picks anymore. It is prospects, and like I said, it's got to be game changers. And it's some players are hard to predict. Guys like Mika Rantanen aren't hard to predict that they're a game changer. So if a team calls you and asks you for Easton Cowan and
Danford
for and whatever other prospects, you could say this is just conjecturing for a guy like Draisaitl. Draisaitl wants to go to the Leafs. You give him up for a guy like Draisaitl.
Not for 1 year. Not as a rental to me. Well, not for me.
But now if you look at it, Rantanen was, he had the discussion to do an extension. So it'd be the same idea.
Yeah, his was kind of a sign and trade, I think.
You don't just give up that stuff for nothing. Like, you can look at Carolina last year, where they did give us much and they scrambled. They still made out good in the end. But, you have to have guarantees behind
it. I think, and this is off the topic for a second, but just following that whole Carolina thing, I'm a firm believer that if Carolina had actually done the trade properly and spoken to Rantanen, he may still be on that team right now. You know what I mean? Like, they went about it so badly, and that's what screwed them over. So, I mean, I would look at your manager and be like, what happened here, bro?
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
At least they were smart enough to try and get assets in return. And like I said, it is working. Stankoven's had a pretty good season.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They used the money that they probably would have used on Rantanen to sign Nikolaj Ehlers.
This is not too bad either. Yep, this is true. So they're not a terrible team by any means. It was a weird situation for sure. So yeah, the Leafs, eh? So it's just a matter of what happens. How are they going to improve? How are they going to stay competitive? And are they going to stay competitive?
Yeah, that's the question. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm a little deflated after seeing that game, to be honest with you. But the consistency has to be better. It's not there right now. It's better than it was, but it needs to be every night. It needs to be 9 out of 10 nights.
For sure.
And I don't even necessarily expect... Like, I'm not talking about 9 out of 10 wins.
Yeah.
I mean, consistently playing the way you're supposed to be playing. And they just haven't been able to do that.
Paul, in your opinion, so he's saying he thinks the window is closed. In your opinion, where's the window at for the Leafs at the moment?
As long as they have Auston Matthews signed, I'd say even up until the last year, the window's still there. It has to be. You're basically putting everything into this franchise cornerstone. You have to do everything you can to keep him, I don't want to say happy, but to keep him wanting to believe that there's a championship happen. And not just wanting it. Like, obviously, all of us want a championship to happen, but to help him believe that there's that window of a championship.
Well, it's the McDavid effect, right? I mean, McDavid gave the Oilers 2 years, and he said, do it or I'm out. And this year is not looking so great. But you never know. They could turn things around. They are starting to win. I mean, traditionally, this is what they do. They start slow. But, what's it going to look like in 2 years?
Well, teams can have a down year. Like, the Tampa Bay Lightning had, they had drafted Steven Stamkos. They actually had a couple of good years with him. Then they had one really bad year, got a Victor Hedman. Then they came back to being a really great team again. So you can have that down year with those kind of players, too.
With the Lightning, wasn't it? Like, was that the year they got swept in the first round by...
No,
Columbus?
No, they had the second overall pick for Hedman, right? So they didn't even make the playoffs. They were bottom of the league.
Right. I see. You meant when they drafted him. Yes. I see. Okay.
So, like I said, you can have a bad year, and I'm not going to, even if Toronto's year this year turns out to be a bad year where they just tank for some reason, I'm not going to be heartbroken over it. It sucks seeing them lose, but at the same time, you gain some of that talent back that you've been giving up over the years. If they can use that pick this year, obviously it's protected.
Yeah.
So they have to get it in the top five, but I won't be angry if they don't.
But would you be angry if they finish, say, 10th last? Because that's probably if they have a bad year, that's where they're headed,
yeah.
Yeah. They have a lottery system that could still possibly get into there. So
no, what's the protection? Is it top 10?
Five.
Top five.
Top five pick. So if they make 10th, you lose that pick, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. If they get sixth, they lose that pick.
It's so funny. Here's the thing. We are Canadian hockey fans. We are the most cynical people out there, Right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
I have not. I have literally been saying ever since Vancouver has been last. In fact, I said this at the beginning of the year. I was like, if Vancouver keeps this up, we'll be last in the league, and we'll still find a way to lose the lottery.
Yeah.
That's the mentality of a Canadian hockey fan.
Or if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you'll win it anyways.
Well, yeah, yeah. But you know, it's so funny because I've been saying that. I was like, you know, Vancouver's going to get last in the league, and we'll still find a way to lose the lottery and lose out on McKenna. Like it's just the way it goes. just baffling the way hockey is sometimes, and it's so cruel. And the reason I feel that way, it's hard not to feel depressed and like cynical yeah. all the time, being a sports fan in general, because when I watched the Whitecaps lose that game, I'm like, I'm never going to see a championship. But I mean, it's just the way it is. Sometimes that's the way it goes, and it's still promising with everything going on and with the Whitecaps. I still think that they're going to be back again next year, and I think they'll be stronger next year. So it's just a matter of what they can do to get there. So it's a scary time, and it's a fun time, and you know, I think if you're not a sports fan in general, then you're lucky because it's painful sometimes. It's painful sometimes. Hey, so a couple episodes ago, we did this fun little game where we ranked the best player to wear a certain number from 1 to 15 in the NHL. Or actually, we did in sports in general.
Yeah.
I stuck to the NHL, but I think you guys kind of went off the book and went to like different sports. This episode, I think, let's go 16 to 31.
30.
Or is it 30? Okay. Yeah, 16 to 30.
Yeah.
16 to 30.
I went more NHL heavy this time.
Okay. I'm still sticking to my NHL roots. Yeah. But I will let you guys go first and we'll kind of go from there.
I actually found these stretch of numbers to be kind of tough.
Yeah.
Because other than like being a lifetime Leafs fan and seeing some of the players that have worn the numbers over the years, some of these numbers aren't really like NHL heavy as far as, you know, like some GOAT players or even other sports.
Yeah.
Like there's some strange numbers in here. So I'm curious to see where we all go with these.
Now, I will specify, normally, I think the last time we did this, I was very Canuck heavy with my numbers. I didn't go as heavy on Canucks.
Well, I went less heavy for sure.
Yeah. and I normally I would because of course fandom, but I had to think outside the box. Best player is kind of the route I went. So we'll see if you guys are kind of on the same boat. I did my favorite player of all time is my certain pick for one certain number, and I think you guys already know who it is, but we'll see if you pick the same thing. So number 16, who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'm going to go Brett Hull.
Yeah.
You know, 8-time All-Star, Stanley Cup twice, Hart Memorial Hockey Hall of Fame. Guy could...
His foot was in the crease, though.
Yeah. I don't give a bleep. One of the best scorers to ever play the game.
Yeah.
And he was originally drafted by the Flames. I was still sad that they gave him up, but, you know, getting a guy like Dougie Gilmour and winning the cup, can't
go. Yeah, really. There. Would you not have won the cup with Brett Hull, though, do you think?
Not when he's that young, I guess. Maybe not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That win with Dallas, was that the first?
That was his first.
Yeah.
Detroit, I think, was his second.
Yeah, So he was older. You want to go next?
I'll go next. Okay. I apologize. I keep grabbing my face here. I'm actually due for a root canal this week. So.
Been there.
It's killing me. Anyway, I got to go Mitch Marner with number 16.
I was wondering. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perennial 90-plus point player. He plays in all situations. He's had a bit of a crappy exit from Toronto, unfortunately for him. But
he's still having a decent year in Vegas, right?
Sorry?
He's still having a decent year in Vegas.
I mean, he's not even a point a game.
No.
So I would say
maybe not.
Not as good as he has been with Toronto. But I also believe in Vegas he's
used differently.
He's used differently and he's slotted behind a couple of guys. Where in Toronto, he was other than Matthews, he was the guy, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just It's sad to see him go. I think it needed to happen. It is what it is.
Yeah, for sure. So originally I was going to go with Brett Hall, but because you chose Brett Hall, I am going to go Canuck heavy on this one, apparently. Trevor Linden, number 16. Yeah. He is, in my opinion, and only because it's during my lifetime, the best captain in Canucks history. I don't necessarily know if that's entirely true because I wasn't there Stan Smeal was a captain on the team. But yeah, Trevor Linden, in my opinion, I wish he still worked for the team because I think he had the best interest for the team and its fans in his mind as the director of hockey ops or the president of hockey ops. Yeah, so for me, that's the guy. You know, all around player, two way guy. Like, yeah. He did everything right. He hit. He was physical. You know, some of the greatest hits in the Canucks history were from Trevor Linden.
I didn't realize he was that type of player either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just did everything right. Led, and he was a great captain. He was the leader of the NHLPA for a long time. So, yeah, it just definitely, for me, that's the guy.
Nice.
Number 17.
I guess I
will. You go first. You went first last time. You go first again.
I just had it now. I'm trying to remember who it was. 1 second. Okay. I think nobody's going to disagree with me on this one, considering he's won the last two World Series.
Yeah, okay.
All Mr. right. Shohei Ohtani.
Okay. Shohei.
Considered, obviously, the greatest baseball player probably of all time now, considering just his overall ability to change a game. And the fact that he's an exceptionally good pitcher, too.
Yeah.
I can't not pick him. If he wasn't around, I might pick Jari Kurri when he played with Gretzky and Messier.
But, that's who I have is Jari Kurri. I don't know if you have that too, but that's the guy I have, yeah.
But, yeah, I have to go Shohei.
I'll go Wendell.
Yeah. Mark.
Yep. Speaking of a guy who hits a lot. Yeah. I didn't get to watch much of him.
I don't think he hits anymore, but...
I mean, if he did, maybe. He'd be in trouble.
Maybe.
He's still a brick house. Anyway, I remember my dad used to talk about him quite a bit, and I've seen lots of highlights, and I think I saw him a little bit when I was very young. But so I didn't get to watch him play too much, but I'm going to go with Mr. Clark, and I wish the Leafs had a couple of those now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Different time, right?
Yeah.
No, for me, Jari Kurri, and you know, I'm purposefully not going to pick a lot of Oilers here, but obviously Jari Kurri, it's undeniable, like, what he did for the league and, you know, what he was capable of doing for the league back in the day. So, yeah, I definitely would pick him. Number 18.
Number 18. Do you want me to go first this time? Or?
Absolutely. Whatever you like.
My pick is terrible, so I'm just going to get it out of the way. ex-Leaf, mustache legend, number 18, Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Scrappy fighter, 5'10", not afraid of anyone. That's literally, I don't, like I said, I struggled. Couldn't think.
Yeah.
Chad Kilger, I could maybe go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really, I can't think of many 18s. Anyway, that's all I got.
Funny enough, I know more about his post-career than I do his playing career, but I have major respect for him because he's one of the greatest coaches of all time, Phil Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
He was number 18 when he played for the Knicks and
cool.
Was a two-time champion in his playing career between 67 and 80, but he's won multiple championships, obviously, since becoming a coach. So
yep.
Nothing but the highest respect for a guy like that.
That's cool.
I feel like I'm super ignorant to, like, the outside sporting world when I think of numbers because I can only remember hockey numbers. I have a really hard time. Even BC Lions, like, I can't think of, you know, Nathan Rourke's number 12. That's all I can think of in terms of, you know, football players or whatever. But, yeah, for me, 18, Serge Savard, Dennis Savard's relative, like, and that's not why, but, you know, like, I just written down here, he's obviously a super skilled defenseman. He won 7 Stanley Cups. Wow. With Montreal, and yeah, it's just, goes back, right? Like, he's one of those dynasty players, and I think that's the reason for me. Most memorable with that number. Okay, number 19. This is the one where my favorite player of all time is. So should I go first?
Sure.
Okay. I already know who it is.
It's Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman, my favorite player of all time. I grew up a Canucks fan, but I had this admiration for Detroit and Steve Yzerman specifically. I thought he was just a wonderful player. Another two-way guy, but like it felt like his offensive talent was so noticeable Like, the guy could whip a slap shot from any point in the ice and he'd score, and it would be top shelf, and it'd be a beautiful goal every single time. And he was a great captain, and I think he's a really good GM now. And I just, you know, there's the one thing that I think that I loved the most about him is that I knew that he was from BC, so it was exciting to know that player like that could come from my province too. So for me, that was it. Number 19.
Go ahead, Paul.
I got to go with probably one of my favorite Canadian players. Certainly helped Canada win in Salt Lake City. Burnaby Joe Sack was my choice for that.
Good, another BC guy. I think at the time, I didn't know Joe Sackett was from BC when I rooted for Iserman. But when I found out he was from BC, it was also exciting to know that they were rivals and they were two BC boys going at it.
Some of his career highlights: he was a 13-time NHL All-Star.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah,
Conn Smythe, obviously, because he won the Cup. Lady Bing, he was a great guy altogether, and again, another Hall of Famer.
I remember him being on the cover of NHL 2004.
Oh, yeah.
I played it on a PC.
I'm pretty sure I played that on a PC as well.
I'll go my pick for number 19. I'll correct you, Joe. It's Steve Azierman, actually.
Right.
Azierman.
Imagine that. All these years, I'm like pronouncing it wrong.
That's right. 3 Stanley Cups as a player, 4 as an executive, Hall of Famer.
All right. We got to keep moving on here. We only got about 4 minutes left, gentlemen. Wow, okay. So let's go to 20. Number 20.
Ed Belfour.
Ooh.
Classic pick. I was always a Cujo fan, but Ed Belfour came in next, and they had some pretty successful years. I just, real quick, I remember his Hall of Fame inductee night. He showed up to the arena in jeans and a leather jacket. The rumor was that the airport lost his bag, but I mean, stop at a couple of stores on the way by or something. I think you could afford it.
He's a classy guy.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to Manu Ginobili. Amazing 3-point shooter. Loved him. 4-time NBA championship. So for me, it's not hard to pick looking at the sports for me picking him.
Yeah, nice. I like that.
Incredible. So Luke Robitaille, number 20. Cool. And I remember hating Robitaille growing up because he was so damn good, right? And he played, you know, he played on the Kings, but it's just too good not to mention. 21,
Boreas Salmi.
I figured you might go that route.
My lucky and favorite number. You know, his ALS diagnosis was pretty bad. His 2 to 3 months before he passed, they honored him, and there wasn't a dry eye in the arena at Scotiabank. Just all-time leader in points by defenseman for Toronto Maple Leafs.
Totally.
I'm going with Tim Duncan.
Thank you, by the way, for doing anybody other than hockey.
Yeah, I don't need to name all the accolades. There's way too many for me to talk about. So he's just one of the absolute greatest power forward centers of all time.
So I was going to go with one of my favorite Canucks back in the day, mostly for his speed, and that was Mason Raymond. Mm-hmm. But I got to go all time. I'm going to say Stan Mikita. Stan Mikita, number 21.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool.
22.
Jake McCabe for me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Pretty simple. I couldn't think of many players that wore number 22. The trade that they made with Chicago to get McCabe and Lafferty at the time probably stands up as one of the better trades they've made in the last decade.
Yeah.
They had term left on his deal, and he's a warrior for them.
If I didn't think Roger Clemens was such a dick, I would pick him, but Ricky Henderson for me.
Cool. Okay.
Stolen bases, man.
For me, I got to go with Daniel Sedin. I can't not, right? I mean, obviously, this is a guy that meant the world to the Canucks and their fans. So, Daniel Sedin. 23. Sorry.
Probably, considering he's the greatest basketball player of all time.
I'll go. I was thinking.
Depends what you say, whether I come over this table or not.
I was going to say Alex Edler. So no, I'm just kidding. No. Of course. Yeah, of course. MJ.
Yeah, MJ. Yeah, Jordan.
You can't not.
Please, I was hoping you were not going to say.
All right, 24.
Jake McCabe's brother from another mother. Brian McCabe.
Brian McCabe.
No, they're not actually related at all.
I was going to say, maybe distantly or something.
One of the last Leafs players to have a really good point shot as a defenseman. I just remember him getting thrown around by Zdeno Chara.
Brian McCabe, did he not play for Vancouver at one point?
I don't know.
I remember Vancouver trading for a McCabe or trading a McCabe away.
Yeah, I actually don't know. While you guys are discussing, I'll look it up.
Who you got?
Kobe.
Kobe. Nice. You could argue he was also number 8.
That was my argument.
Yeah, tragic, obviously,
yeah.
His end with his kid, but hard to argue with the championships, and totally. Yeah, loved him.
Oh, yeah, like, I think it was Kobe and then LeBron, right? Like, that's the sort of statue of things.
Yeah.
For me, it pains me to pick people who played for the Blackhawks, but Chris Chelios.
Fair enough.
I'm moving on. 25.
By the way, he played a season and a half in Vancouver.
Thank Brian you. McCabe. I knew it was Brian McCabe. I knew it was a McCabe. I just couldn't remember.
25 for me. Big Mac, Mark McGuire. I was loving that home run race in 98 with him and Sammy Sosa. And I...